Welcome back to our Street Strong family. Today, we're going to shine a light on mental health challenges faced by the homeless community. And I welcome you as we explore these issues with empathy and insight, aiming to empower and inform. Now, I want to thank all of you for tuning in, but please note that the content shared here is for informational and educational purposes only. Should not be seen as medical advice or a substitute for professional care. While I am a medical professional, I am not your doctor, and this podcast does not replace the necessity of seeing a healthcare provider. If you are experiencing or know someone experiencing healthcare issues, we strongly encourage seeking help from professionals. For those without direct access to healthcare services, we recommend reaching out to local community health clinics, shelters that offer medical services, or organizations dedicated to helping the homeless access necessary medical care. The views expressed on this show are personal opinions and should not be taken as expert medical advice. Listener discretion is, of course, advised. That said, let's roll into the show, and we are going to talk about bipolar disorder. And this is going to be a good one. This is going to be a really good one because bipolar disorder is a very big deal. Okay, it affects about 11% of the homeless population, 11%. That's about an 11-fold increase or difference between the homeless population and the regular population. So for reasons we are going to explain later, bipolar is a unique beast in the homeless population. And so we have to talk about that. 11% is very high. Chances are somebody at your shelter, somebody you know in the homeless community, is dealing with this, is grappling with this. And so giving them the tools they need is so important. And I will say that a lot of these struggles in bipolar disorder are struggles that we all have day to day, except they're more pronounced in bipolar disorder. They're more severe in bipolar disorder. So this is a good podcast episode for really anybody who's interested in optimizing their mental health and learning a little more about mental health. So we're going to talk about what is bipolar disorder. We're going to talk about how it's diagnosed, early warning signs of bipolar, in addition to the impact that bipolar has specifically on homeless populations. And we're also going to talk about practical tips in how we can help manage this situation a little bit better, prevention and in terms of treatment. Where could you go if this is a problem for you? So again, thank you all for tuning in so much. Let's roll right into this episode. Now, bipolar disorder, what is it? I'll tell you something. Bipolar disorder is a mental health condition that causes extreme mood swings. Now, these mood swings could be really high highs, known as mania or hypomania, and they could be really low lows, like depression. When someone is experiencing a manic phase, they might feel really happy, full of energy, on top of the world. Or they could also be really irritable. And I find that that irritability piece is often missed. We often don't think about that when we think of bipolar. We think of someone who's just really happy and energized all the time, or we think of someone who's really down and they feel both of those things. But in reality, a lot of folks are just very irritable. And I don't mean irritable like somebody cuts them in line at the soup kitchen. I don't mean irritable because they played a scratch off and lost. I'm talking about waking up irritable and everything irritates the bejesus out of them all day long. They are annoyed and very cranky, for lack of a better word, about anything. And it doesn't really matter what's happening around them. That's just the mood. That's the way they see things. Now, in bipolar disorder, in addition to unstable moods, behaviors tend to change. Impulsive decisions are made. We'll talk about that a little bit later. There's trouble sleeping. When folks who are bipolar are in the depressive phase, they might feel really sad or hopeless. They might lose interest in daily activities. Now, these mood swings we're talking about can affect sleep. They can affect energy levels. They can affect behavior, judgment, and the ability to think clearly. Episodes of mood swings may occur rarely or multiple times a year. And between episodes, many people with bipolar disorder are actually free of mood changes entirely, but they might have some lingering symptoms. Now, there's an episode back in the day, which was a Wednesday, and I encourage all of you to go look at it. I talk about depression in previous episodes, but no conversation about bipolar would be complete without a conversation about depression. Now, this is what makes this diagnosis so darn tricky. This is what makes this condition so darn tricky. Because when we think bipolar, when I ask people about bipolar disorder and I ask them to list out symptoms, I want you, in fact, right now to think about three or four symptoms that come to mind when you think of somebody who's bipolar. Go ahead and take a second to do that. Now, as you're thinking, you might be thinking of someone who's really confident, someone who's very talkative, someone who has tons of energy and is really happy. And you would be right that that can happen. But what people typically don't say when I ask them about symptoms of bipolar is they don't talk about the depression. And yet the majority of the time, most of the time in bipolar disorder, people are actually feeling pretty depressed. They're feeling pretty low, pretty down, pretty sad. So it looks like depression. So when I see patients on Skid Row, you know, I can't help but think a lot of them have depression because that's the first thing I see, right? But in reality, I have to really ask questions because not everybody just swings to the depressive pole. Some people are also very manic or very irritable. So they're not just down all the time, but some people have a week or two where they, you know, feel like they're on top of the world. Like they have so much confidence that nothing can really stop them. So depression is a huge chunk of time. Of course, it changes from person to person. Not everybody has the exact same thumbprint of bipolar disorder. But for the folks that do, they tend to stay in depression most of the time. And so a lot of people think that they're depressed when they're actually bipolar and they could actually swing to both sides of the mood spectrum. They can be really sad or really happy. They could be really sad and then really irritable or revved up. And so it's really important that we understand the possibilities of both. Now, depression, as we talked about before, is not just feeling down, right? That's too simple. It's not just feeling down, but it's feeling sad or empty or hopeless, no matter really what else is going on in front of you. You could win the lottery. And if you're super depressed, you may not react in a positive way at all, right? There's old stories I learned in nursing school about, you know, folks who won the lottery when they were depressed. And their answer was, well, you know, now I got to pay the taxes on that, right? So you win $50 million. And when you have depression, you're thinking about the amount of money you're going to owe in taxes and not the fact that you just won $50 million. So what if you have to pay $15 million in taxes if you've got $45 million left over? So that gives you an idea of the depressed mindset where you just don't get a lot of joy out of anything. Everything feels kind of sad, empty, pointless, meaningless. You know, everything's a little bit flat or dull. That's the depressed mindset. And so, you know, in depression, again, we see weight changes. Some people eat too much. Some people eat too little. We see issues falling asleep or staying asleep. A lot of waking up too early. We see folks who sleep too much and they just don't want to get out of bed at all. What's the point of getting out of bed? I'm not motivated. I don't feel like brushing my teeth. Why would I comb my hair? I'm worthless. I don't feel good about myself. There's no point in looking good today. There's no point in getting up to work today. I feel worthless and guilty. And my mind is just, you know, foggy. I can't make decisions very easily. It's hard to concentrate. And then, of course, folks who feel depressed also will commonly think about suicide. They'll think about death. And it's not just suicide, although a lot of folks who are depressed do feel like they may want to commit suicide or they have thoughts of death and suicide. But what I mean specifically is that folks who are depressed will often just think about death. Death becomes more of a common thought pattern. It doesn't necessarily mean they want to kill themselves, but if you're starting to think about death or obsess about death more often, it could be a soft sign that you may have some depression going on in addition to all of the other symptoms I just described. Now, I'm really beating the dead horse on depression for a reason, because so much of bipolar disorder is depression. And that's why it gets missed all of the time by people and by mental health care professionals. It can often take years. It can often take years to diagnose bipolar disorder, because every time a patient comes in, we see depression. And when we ask them about bipolar, if we don't ask it carefully enough, we might feel that, you know, they actually may not even report it to us. They might feel like all those times they felt super happy and confident were great times, and they don't feel sick when they feel that way. They feel really productive and really good. And so they don't even mention it a lot of times to healthcare professionals. So all we see is depression. And that's not good. We need to have the full picture of what's going on. We need to understand. And that's why bipolar diagnosis is very challenging. And look, another challenge out there is that unlike a test for tuberculosis or COVID, there is no one test for bipolar, right? There's not a blood test that comes back and says, oh, this person's bipolar, right? That's not the case. We have to ask questions, very detailed questions. And the patient has to be able to answer certain events in their lives, you know, answer things about events that have happened in their lives. Sometimes it takes the family to really get a good idea of how the patient has felt throughout their lives, if there's been any kind of unusual activity. Now, of course, if you're homeless, that's really tough, because the folks I meet on Skid Row, I don't have access to their moms and cousins and uncles, because, you know, my friends are on the street and they don't even have ways for me to really communicate with them outside of the clinic. They don't talk to their families as often. So that's very hard to understand when it comes to mental health and homelessness. It's hard to understand a patient's history. A lot of times my friends on Skid Row, they might not be thinking too clearly. It's not always easy to remember what you were doing when you were 23 years old and how much sleep you got, and that one time that you were driving 80 miles an hour in a school zone because you felt so confident and you had such great ideas, right? That's something that might happen in bipolar disorder, and yet it might be missed and not talked about by the person who's suffering from it. So these are the challenges. It can take years to accurately diagnose bipolar disorder if we are not careful about it, right? And so our best bet is to ask about patterns of mood and sleep and energy and behavior. And that's the best bet we have in trying to figure out bipolar disorder. You know, for me especially, I want to know how early you experience depression in your life. To me, that's very important, because typically it's not a gold standard, but if you had depression much younger in your life and you had multiple depressive episodes, and maybe someone in your family had really high and low energy and maybe was bipolar, that might make me believe that you're more likely to experience bipolar disorder. It's possible, right? Those are some soft clues. If you have a history of abusing a lot of alcohol or cocaine or some substance, I might be a little more suspicious that bipolar is something we need to talk about. It's not a guarantee, right? But these are just signs that I might be a little more suspicious if there's a history of substance use, many depressive episodes, history of agitation or not sleeping very well because you have a lot of energy, those types of things I would be very curious about. Now, let's talk about the early warning signs of bipolar disorder, okay? Ways we might be able to sniff this out. And if you're listening to this, this could be valuable. Now, a big hallmark of bipolar disorder is sleep that just gets really wild, okay? Now, let's be careful with this one, right? Because all of us have sleep issues. And sure as heck, if you're homeless, you have sleep issues. It's such a tough part of being homeless, is just not being able to sleep regularly. It's so difficult. But sleep changes are a little soft sign in maybe understanding that someone could be experiencing bipolar disorder. They just don't feel like they have to sleep very much. They're so energized, they don't feel the need to sleep. They have good ideas. They have new inventions. They might want to be on the news because they have an idea about, you know, ending world hunger or starting a company. You know, creative ideas in the wee hours of the night, or the need to clean, the need to rearrange their, you know, their belongings. That kind of stuff can keep folks up who are suffering from bipolar disorder. It could also just be mind racing. Your mind is moving a million steps a minute, and you just feel that it's very difficult to focus, and your mind is just moving a million miles an hour, and it's hard to fall asleep, or you're very irritable. So it's not always that you have these amazing projects and ideas and that you want to call people in the wee hours of the night just to talk to them. That might not be the only thing we're looking at, right? And so we got to really think about this carefully. Now, another sign is that you're just more irritated around people. Maybe you're more irritated around your kids, around the people around you on the street, right? People just annoy you more. And it's hard for you to kind of let go. You're agitated. So you're maybe depressed and you feel a little bit moody. You're agitated at people and the littlest things start to annoy you, right? We talked a little bit about when you don't sleep and you have goals, but generally it doesn't have to be when you're trying to sleep. It could just be goal-driven activities. You have these goals that you just want to act on right away without really thinking through them, right? And now everybody has goals. So it's, we're not trying to say that everybody who has a goal to start their own company or, you know, work at Dunkin' Donuts, that's wrong or that it's bad or that you're bipolar. We're talking about random goals. Sometimes they're way too ambitious in the sense that you don't really have maybe the qualifications to do what you're thinking of. Like if I woke up in the middle of the night tonight and I said, you know, I really want to be an astronaut, and I started emailing random former astronauts, asking them how I could become an astronaut one day. And I woke up my family and talked about how I have this great idea of how I could get to space in the next 9 days if people will just listen to me, right? That's a little bit unpredictable. That's a little bit too, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense in light of the fact that I do mental health, right? My job's not to be launched into space and create my own moon colony, right? So that wouldn't make a lot of sense. And so what we're talking about here is when you're passionate about something suddenly and you're not thinking through it really, the details are not great, and you do this, maybe you'll spend a lot of money all of a sudden on an idea, and then when you no longer feel manic or happy, you realize, oh no, you know, where's all my money in my account, right? Why did I talk to that person? I talked his ears off for an hour about this thing that I don't care about anymore. So that's what we're talking about, right? And in the moment, it's so hard. That's what makes bipolar such a devilish illness, right? It's because in the moment we feel when we're bipolar that what we're doing is, it feels so right. It feels so good. But then the aftermath is when we really take hits and feel ashamed. And it's really tough. It's a really tough illness. It can cause a lot of problems for folks. They can spend all their money. They can have random sexual impulses that they, you know, they want to touch or kiss or smell someone close to them, including strangers. You know, reckless sex can happen more often. You know, this happens on Skid Row, right? Where we just have this inclination to have sex or to abuse alcohol or methamphetamines, and we do it more recklessly, right? Because in bipolar, typically, our impulses are kind of all over the place, and that can be very challenging. So you might be more impulsive. You might be doing really risky stuff that you later regret, right? And that can be mixed up in everything else we're doing, right? Again, we can be happy, we can be sad, we can be irritable, but we're also mixed in there is a lot of this other stuff I'm talking about, where you feel hypersexual, you feel more impulsive, you want to spend money, start projects, that kind of thing, right? And again, your mind is racing so fast that it's really hard to focus. It's really hard to even finish or make a dinner, right? You might be able to grab a Cheez-It or something, or a finger food, pigs in a blanket, whatever, onions, Blue Bunny ice cream. Okay, even Blue Bunny ice cream, though, is tough because you got to sit there and lick it and eat it slowly. If you're feeling a little bipolar, you don't have a lot of time. You're just constantly getting out of your chair, your seat, talking to other people. You don't have a lot of time. You just feel very rushed and everything's happening so fast, right? So these are some of the major you know, red flags slash warning signs. We're talking about fluctuating moods and emotions, impulsive behaviors. And, you know, this isn't, you know, we can all be impulsive sometimes, right? We can all have a hard time focusing sometimes. So don't think that just because you have one of these symptoms, it's the whole ball game. All right, my friends, it's patterns, right? If you have a few days in a row where you really can't sleep because of so much energy, if your character is changing, if you feel like, you know, who you are becoming is very different from what how you felt just a few days or weeks ago. If the people around you are noticing a big change in your behavior, in your mood, in your sleep patterns, that's something that would cause some alarm and we want to look at a little more closely. Now, let's talk a little bit more about homelessness and bipolar. Specifically, we already talked about an 11%, you know, that's a rough estimate, but 11% of folks who are homeless have bipolar disorder, and how that's an 11-fold increase in bipolarity from homelessness to people who are not currently without a home. And, you know, it makes perfect sense that that would happen, because what triggers homelessness, or excuse me, what triggers the bipolar disorder oftentimes is a heck of a lot of stress. And homelessness in and of itself is a major stressor. I'd go as far to say as it is a trauma. In and of itself, homelessness is traumatic. And so we know that with trauma, with stress, that can bring on depression. Absolutely. It can bring on bipolar disorder. Absolutely can. And we also know that just having depression or bipolar can in and of itself drive homelessness, right? So it's two directions that it's going in here. If you're bipolar or depressed, it might be very hard for you to hold a job. You might get into a lot of arguments with other people. And it might be very difficult for you to hold a job and be steady if your sleep is all over the place and your finances are having, you know, you're spending all your money because you feel impulsive. And that can lead you to homelessness. So it goes both ways. Now, you know, with homelessness, of course, getting little sleep can also trigger a bipolar relapse. So if you've had bipolar episodes in the past and now you're homeless and you're not getting sleep, well, that's a major problem, because not getting regular sleep can trigger this stuff. And, you know, so again, it's getting hit twice or three times when you're homeless. So many other things become more complicated. Your sleep rhythms get so disorganized when you're homeless that it makes it very hard to maintain good mental health. We talked about sleep in a previous episode. Please, let's dig into my other episodes, because these all kind of come full circle. And, you know, homelessness is so traumatic and it can be so scary that a lot of folks start using drugs, methamphetamine, heroin, cocaine, alcohol. A lot of my friends on Skid Row, they try to numb their pain and their terror of being homeless and pass the time and not feel as miserable as they do. So they go to drugs, and, you know, drugs also can cause a relapse in bipolar disorder and make things a heck of a lot more stressful. Not just that, but if you are on the street and you're feeling really depressed, a lot of my friends on Skid Row, they prefer cocaine or meth because it helps them feel more alert and it helps them feel more focused. And so they'll take that because that's what they have available to them. They don't have insurance. They're not networked with a bunch of healthcare providers. And so for a few bucks, they inject meth or snort cocaine, and it makes them feel focused and alive. And the same thing goes for, you know, depression. So depression, or if you're feeling manic, if you're feeling, you know, the highs on the street, you might go for heroin or cannabis or something like that to feel more down, to feel more relaxed. As we know, and we've talked about this at length in other episodes, not trying to preach to the choir here, but, you know, everything's laced with fentanyl these days. And we talked about in our fentanyl fast facts episode that even a few dashes, like it looks like a few dashes of salt in a soup. That's how much fentanyl can just kill you. And it's in everything nowadays. I've had friends on Skid Row that discovered it in their nicotine, in their cigarettes. So we're not talking about just hard drugs that are mixed with other hard drugs. We're talking about fentanyl in marijuana, in cigarettes. They're everywhere, and they're laced in those things because it's more powerful and it's more addicting. So people make more money when they lace your stuff with fentanyl. Well, that's a problem because now you're bipolar, you're on the street, you're trying to feel less depressed. You take cocaine, you get this instant high, you feel great. That's wonderful. But then look, there's fentanyl in your powder, in your injection, and bam, you're dead on the street and you need Narcan to wake you up and revive you. It's really scary stuff, my friends. And so this is the trap that we fall into when we are homeless and how difficult this can be for them. So now that we talked about the scary stuff and some of the, you know, features of this diagnosis, we can talk a little bit about practical tips. So this is really for folks that are out there on the street. They have no access to doctors, nurses, social workers, case managers. They're out there on the street and they are thinking, you know, what the heck am I going to do, right? Again, you heard my disclaimer at the start of this. It is so important that if you can see a medical provider that you do so, please. You know, you could always present to the ER in an emergency. You can call 911. You can call 988. You can report to homeless shelters and see if they have caseworkers and other professionals over there that can link you up with help. Please, please do that work. It's so worth it when you get linked in to these resources. A lot of these folks in shelters have networks. They know a guy who knows a guy who knows a girl who knows a guy who can help you get subsidized housing, affordable housing, a studio down the block that is right down the block from where you sleep at night. And it's a matter of just getting there and landing the deal, and you can do it. So it's not just about sobriety. It's not just about mental health. Get linked up with these folks at your local shelters. Ask questions. Ask 100 questions if you have to. How do you know? Ask them, how can I get resources for my mood that I've been experiencing a really down mood, really ups and downs, and how can I get help for that? Where do I go? There's a lot of treatment out there. So before I give these practical tips, I just want to say that whatever drugs you might be using now, there are medications that once you get looked at by a mental health professional, there are medications that can help you feel less depressed. They can help you, you know, stabilize your mood with mood stabilizers so that you don't feel so high and so irritable and you do things you later regret that are dangerous, or you'll use drugs because you're impulsive when you're feeling manic or bipolar. There's medications that can absolutely change the game for you and make you feel better if you sit down with a mental health professional, right? So it's so worth it. What you can do while you're on the street is try your best. And oh my God, I almost didn't want to write this because how on earth are my friends on the street going to have normalized their sleep patterns? It's extremely difficult, but it's one of the most important things if you can. And of course, that means engaging with your local shelter. A lot of my friends sleep in tents. A lot of my friends are on the street. They have no idea where they're going to be the next day. But doing our best and asking for the resources to get a bed and a shelter is so important, because normalizing sleep schedules is everything for our mental health. It's not just bipolar and depression. It's everything else. Not sleeping means you're going to feel more impulsive the next day. You're going to feel more moody the next day. You name it. It makes our lives so much harder. So if in any way you can, I know it's so hard for my friends on the street, any way you can, try to normalize your sleep schedule by getting in touch with a shelter and getting a bed, you know, or even if you're on the street in a tent, waking up the same time every day and not changing it up so much so that your schedule is at least routine, even if you're not sleeping comfortably, that you're in a safe place where you can try and sleep your best at the same time, waking up and going to bed at the same time every day. Again, not easy at all. A lot of shelters have earplugs or eye masks to block out light after a certain time. So it's really important that you try to block out screens and lights, you know, when you're going to bed or a few hours before bed. So ask your shelters if they have eye masks and earplugs, because it can get noisy on the street. It can get really difficult. So do your best and try to link up with those resources. If you're a homeless shelter, please be thinking about this. Eye masks, earplugs, ways to get folks sleeping more regularly and to connect the dots between mental health and sleep and all these other issues. Second practical tip is to breathe, right? We talk about breathing. It sounds hooey. It sounds silly, but it's so foundational. It's been done for thousands of years. Athletes do it. Military does it. Everybody does it. Deep breathing, meditation, whatever you can. You know, we talked about 4-7-8 breathing, right? I'll go over it again, but you inhale through your nose for 4 seconds. You hold for 7 seconds, and then you breathe through your mouth or exhale for 8 seconds. And that's going to help calm you down and ground you. 4-7-8 breathing, right? And just reducing stress by deep breathing as often as you can. I have friends on Skid Row that do 10 push-ups every time they go to a crosswalk. That's pretty bold. I'd feel really weird if I did that, but I have so much, I'm inspired by that. Like, I don't have the confidence to do 10 push-ups at every crosswalk. I wish I did. I would look a lot better. But if my friends can do 10 push-ups at every crosswalk, you can definitely do 4-7-8 breathing at every crosswalk. You can do 4-7-8 breathing before you enter any grocery store or 7-Eleven. Just anchor it. Have it part of your day as a regular way for you to really feel more in control and more grounded. That helps kind of prevent the slide of a lot of these mental illnesses getting worse, right? You know, talking about sunlight, getting more sunlight during the day, early in the day. Just, we want to regulate the sunlight. We want to reduce the bright screens at nighttime. You know, we talked about nutrition in the past in our podcast episodes. I highly encourage you to go to our nutrition episodes. We talk about one great episode about how food can be thy medicine. We talked about canned fish last episode and how important that is. Again, so much of our mental health relies on a balanced diet, on eating the right foods to make those chemicals in our brains that really help calm us down and make our moods more stable. So making sure that we're eating fresh foods, nutritious foods, you know, work with your homeless shelters to make sure that we are really offering the best of the best of the best. Now, I'm not saying we got to offer caviar in a homeless shelter. Oh, that would be pretty cool. Props to any homeless shelter out there that can offer caviar. Please message me at streetstrongpodcast@gmail.com if you're the first homeless shelter to offer caviar. But you get my point here. Good, balanced, nutritious meals, that's what we need. We've got to step up our game. What you all do out there is so amazing already. The homeless shelters I've volunteered at, from what my friends on Skid Row are telling me, the work, you're all doing God's work. It's incredible. It's amazing the kinds of people out there helping, rolling their sleeves up, volunteering every day of their lives to help the homeless. So what you're doing is fantastic, but we can always do even better, and we can be more creative. So again, that's why I would love for you to email me at my Gmail account so you can let me know, like, what are some amazing recipes that you're able to produce in your shelters to balance out, you know, nutrition and be creative and engaging and get our homeless population more excited about nutrition to get them back on their feet faster, right? Now, another really cool practical tip is mood tracking. Keep track of your moods. Keep track of your sleep. Again, kind of hard to do if you're on the street and you're homeless, but there's potential there. You get a little notepad, composition book, borrow one from the shelter, go to the public library, and, you know, you can access tons of information there as well at the library, but you can also get maybe a notepad and just you know, jot down how much sleep you're getting. What does your mood feel like on days that you're sleeping this amount of hours and that amount of hours? What is your mood like when you're able to be in a shelter? All of those things are super important. That about wraps up this podcast episode. I thank each and every one of you for being here. Please do your best to spread the word about this podcast. Let every single homeless shelter that you know of in your area, let them know we have a podcast for them. We have practical tips to improve mental health in the homeless population so that we all are in this together and we lift each other up and we remember that homelessness is temporary, that it does not define who you are at all in any way at all. You did not make bad decisions. You've made great decisions in your life. You're worthy. You're capable. We love you. You're just like us. You are us. We are you, right? Anyone who's homeless or not homeless, it doesn't matter. We're all sharing the same little piece of rock that's spinning in the universe. At the end of the day, that's our home. You're a fool if you believe that just because you live in a 6-bedroom house, that that's your house forever and that's okay, yeah, you paid the mortgage. Yeah, I get it. I get it. I'm not trying to get into a political debate here. What I'm trying to say is we all end up leaving this world at some point, going somewhere else. And that home is nobody's. But the one home that we do have together beyond any debate is this little spinning rock in the middle of the universe. And so none of us are truly homeless. We're all sharing the same space together. Let's not kid ourselves. Let's not fool ourselves and fool other people and make other people feel bad. Because at the end of the day, it's about who you are deep inside. It's about those little moments when you can deep breathe, when you can enjoy a sunset. I have friends on Skid Row that sleep in their car, and they're a hell of a lot happier than people that I know in my family who live in beautiful houses. So please don't think that owning a home is the whole ball game. And I know it's easier said than done. If I was homeless, woof, you know, I get it. I get it. And I also don't get it, right? That's the point. But you get my point. That was my little soapbox for the day. But please reach out and give me your best and brightest recommendations for what you want to hear in future episodes. What's going well in your homeless shelters and your community? We've had folks ask about policy and what the policies look like out there, and just sharing all this good information. It's actually an exciting time in the nation because homelessness is such a central issue now. I feel like, you know, the bad part of that is that it's such a raging problem. The good part is that it's such a raging problem that people are finally moving on this issue and you know, figuring out what to do about it. And we're getting really creative and inspired. Your days of being homeless are numbered. There's help and hope for you. I see it every day on Skid Row. And Skid Row is really ground zero for a lot of the major homeless problems in the country. My friends on Skid Row talk about how awful it can be on those streets. And if my friends on Skid Row can get studio apartments and smile every day and be grateful and happy and excited about their future and tackle their mental health, you better damn well believe that can happen to you too. And it will happen to you too. And you keep the hope alive. Take care, everybody. It was great tuning in with you again. Bye-bye.